You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hi, this is Jay Horowitz with a really different kind of Alumni Mentor podcast. In my years here, I've done a lot of people who earned stardom in Citi Field and Shea Stadium, but for the first time, I'm interviewing a young fellow who did pretty well on the basketball court, Chris Mullin, best player in St. John's history, All-Pro with Golden State in Indiana. But for me, the most important thing, Chris, a diehard Mets fan. That's number one in my book.
That's true, Jay.
How did you become a Mets fan, Chris? I know born in New York, went to Xavier, you know, high school. How did you first become a Mets fan?
Jay, first, it's so nice to see you. I'm so glad to be with you.
Me too, Chris.
Yeah, I became a Mets fan. I think really geographically, you know, growing up in Brooklyn, we naturally gravitated towards the Mets, the Jets. They were our teams growing up. And there was a small connection. I grew up on Flatbush and Flatlands. And Gil Hodges lived close by us, right? So we would drive by his house when I was a young kid, right by Marine Park. So having someone in our neighborhood, we just felt connected to that. And then, of course, as I grew up through high school and mostly at St. John's, there was this man who just gave me incredible tickets anytime I asked.
Who would that be, Chris?
I mean, I would call 5 minutes before a game, and this guy, Jay Horowitz, would always give me parking and tickets. So, you know, thank you for – you asked me before, Jay, about my brother Terrence. He's doing well. But over the years, and I probably have to apologize for this, whether it be my brothers, my nieces and nephews, and now my sons probably still call you.
That's fine. The Mullins are always welcome at Citi Field.
I never heard the word no from Jay Horowitz.
No, never. Never. Because you don't remember when you were working as executive in Golden State. Every time we were in, you never missed a game, always came out to see us play. And, you know, I just admire your dedication. Was there a favorite guy, you know, you were, you know, with the 86 team, any one guy stand out or, you know, you liked?
Well, it's funny, Jay. I watched that team grow, right? So I went to St. John's in 81. So 81, 82, even 83, the stadium was kind of wide open. We could go, you know, you'd leave us tickets, but we could go sit anywhere we wanted to, right? I think it was 84 when Darryl came up and started, the excitement started. 85 when Doc came, then the place was sold out. That tremendous trade for Keith Hernandez. So I kind of watched that team grow, watched the stadium get re-energized. And that was an amazing, amazing time. I go back, I was born in 63, so I do remember the 69 team, mainly for my baseball cards, flipping baseball cards. And then 73, so growing up, whether we were playing stickball or wiffle ball, we would go through the entire lineup, you know, whether it be Ed Cranepool, Felix Beyond, Bud Harrelson, Ed Charles, Wayne Garrett, Cleon Jones, Tommy Agee. So I remember all those players. And just had a real connection. I mean, baseball at that point in time when I was growing up was the number one sport. We would go sit in front of the TV and watch Channel 9, WOR, and watch the Mets, watch the entire game. Kindness Corner. If it was raining out, that was always that was always fun. But we watched the game and then go outside and try and imitate those certain bat stances. So I had a tremendous connection, Tom. Those great pitches, Tom Seaver, John Matlack, Gary Gentry, Tug McGraw coming out of the bullpen. So I was a pretty big fan.
Chris, how good your memory in 85, that's the Final Four year, right? 85 to 81.
Correct.
On the cover of the April Fool's edition that year, I think you were on the cover, and that was the story Sid Finch broke that day that was inside that cover. And that was one of my crowning whatever feats. Sid Finch was a 6'7" guy from a faraway land who threw 190 mile an hour fastball. And I think you were on the cover because that was the Final Four weekend. It was April 1st, 1985. Do you have the cover in your house anyplace?
I do. I'm sure it's in my garage somewhere, but I do remember that fictitious story about Sid Finch. I think actually some people may believe that, Jay, and they were hoping
they did. We couldn't have done that in the age of Twitter, but for a couple of days we had people fooled. You know, 6 foot seven guy with one shoe played the flute and threw 190 mile an hour fastball. Well, I love that kind of stuff. But now I just remember your pitch was on the cover. You know, I have it in my house. That was the Final Four weekend. You know, we did do that. I don't know if you know. After you left St. John, you know, I got to be friends with Brian Mahoney and Ron Rutledge, of course, and Bobby Bonilla helped recruit Felipe Lopez. We used to go to Rice High School all the time, and you know, when I remember Brian called me the day we got him, and I guess what we did was probably illegal. Probably, I mean, a professional athlete recruited a high. We used to, you know, Bobby. I forget where they were saying, but you know, Bobby watched Felipe play a lot. We used to go watch him in the stands, and I remember the day that Brian called and said that you know, we got him and everything. That was I said, you know, I remember back, Chris, when Franco, were you in school with Franco and Viola? I forget the time things, you know.
I came in right after they left, but I got to know both of them.
When you were coaching, we used to go down to Miami and, you know, watch you guys play. And, you know, Johnny Bleeds, you know, St. John's Blue. And you got to be friends with him after that, I remember. You
know? Yeah, I love John Franco. He's a good friend, you know, tough Brooklyn guy, loyal. He had an incredible career, one of the best lefty relievers of all time. And Frank, I went to see Frank Viola when he was pitching for Minnesota. When I was out in the Bay Area, I went to the Oakland A's game and sat with his dad. And I remember he was an incredible pitcher, sweet music, Frank Viola.
Yeah.
And it might have been the fourth or fifth inning. And the manager kind of got to the top of the steps. I remember his dad said, get back in the hole. Leave him alone.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
He didn't want Frankie coming out of the game.
You know what I remember? My close friend Al Ababo, you know, was a good, when I was a Philly Dickens, he was a coach. And we started to go to all your games, you know, especially in your years when you're there. We used to go to Dante's after the games and have Bill Parmesan at 1 o'clock with Lou and everybody. What do you remember? Al had the greatest haircut known to mankind, I think.
Yeah, Jay, just an incredible defensive mind, tenacious. You know, he was the mastermind, really. He taught Bobby Knight defense, if you can believe that. And you know that up in Army. And when he came to St. John's, I mean, you think about the staff coach put together. You mentioned Brian Mahoney and Ron Rutledge, two incredible basketball minds and incredible recruiters. But Al Lababo, Coach Carnesecca, way ahead of his time, really having a defensive coordinator. And he'd get 20 minutes a day, and he would just go after us and teach us and was relentless. And for people that don't know, defense wasn't my strong suit. So Coach Lababo taught me that I could be an effective defender in different ways, maybe not athletically or with speed and quickness. So he was tremendous. He had a huge impact on my career. And to be surrounded by those people, you know, from 18 to 21 years old, not only, you know, was a tremendous advantage for me from a basketball standpoint, but just the guidance, the mentorship, and just the example they set for young men was incredible, from Coach Carnesecca to Al Lababo, Brian Mahoney, Ron Rutledge.
Chris, when I was at the SID at Fairleigh and Al was a coach, we didn't have a gym at that time. So we used to travel around the country. We lost a game in 38 different states. And I got that note in Sports Illustrated. And I thought Al was going to kill me. My first game on the job was the SID. I copied the notes down in the scorebook. We played in Maine, in Oriental, Maine, and we started the game with two technical fouls. Remember, Al Kamado with his scorebook. And Alan K. Now I know why I was from NYU dropped F in basketball. And thankfully, my friendship got stronger after the years. But that was a kind of, you know, rough beginning. Chris, moving around a little bit, 1992, 30 years anniversary of the Dream Team. What do you remember most about that year?
Yeah, an amazing experience with the Dream Team. You know, the first time NBA players were eligible to participate in the Olympics. So it's an original experience for all of us. Somewhat of an experiment from FIBA, the International Basketball Committee, and the NBA, David Stern, and the Olympics got together and opened it up. We had been participating against the European and foreign teams pros already in the past. But I think, you know, part of their vision was to globalize the game of basketball, catch up in participation and popularity with soccer. 30 years later, that has happened. Obviously, NBA basketball, college basketball throughout the world, it's probably the second most popular sport behind soccer right now, in participation and viewership and all those different statistical numbers. But David Stern was a visionary. To get to play for Chuck Daly, our coaching staff, there was Chuck Daly, Lenny Wilkins, Coach K, and PJ, Carlissimo. And then everyone knows the great, great players of Magic, Larry, Michael, Charles, all the legends of the 90s. To be able to play with those guys, to get to know them, obviously winning the gold medal was the crowning jewel. But the experiences are friendships that we made, relationships that we made last to this day. And I said, when you do something for the first time, there's just something special about that. And people ask me about it all the time. It was a dream. It was a dream come true. I remember I got that call from my agent, Bill Pollack, because the prize was a selection. It was not a tryout. And fortunately, at that point in time, I was playing at a really high level. International basketball at that point in time wasn't as integrated. So it was a big difference between the NBA and international basketball at that point in time. Now, somewhat similar with the three-point line, with the prominence of the three-point line in the NBA. But we were going to face a lot of zones, so I was a perfect fit for that team. And like I said, the experiences, the memories, just to me, probably the crowning moment of my career. You know, coming from where I came from, you know, having a great college career, starting my career, kind of struggling a little bit, and then being at the top of my game at that point in time. Looking back, that was the greatest moment in my career.
Can I talk a little bit about Lou? You know, because it going to the games, we became friends. I tried calling him every, you know, wish him a happy birthday. I think he's 96 or 97 now. You know, it's somebody close to dear and near to your heart. He calls me every September, wishing me a happy Yom Kippur. Lou was a big baseball guy too. I think he played baseball before basketball, right? Do you remember that? But what, talk about Lou, what he meant to your career. For a second.
Yeah, Jay. And you know this because you've been around Coach for so long. Just one of the most unique, special human beings in the world. I met him when I was 10 years old. At his camp, and obviously, you know, he was, you know, head coach of St. John's. He was teaching us drills and skills, but when he gave lectures, he always had something more to it than teaching basketball. There was always a message in his lecture, in his teaching, whether it be about being a good teammate, being unselfish, being responsible, being a loyal friend. It was always something mixed in with his basketball. And that was when I was 10, and that has continued till now, to this day. He is 97, sharp as a whip. As you said, he always reaches out to see how you're doing, right?
No question.
Doesn't forget any of your family. Just, you know, he's just one of those special people. So he's had the biggest influence on my life. Obviously, my mom and dad, and my siblings. But you think about, I've known Coach now for 49 years, you know, and he's always been a steady confidant, I go back, he coached me for 4 years, right? And we had an incredible 4 years together on the basketball court. But I think of the times you brought up Dante's, all the meals we had together,
right?
The bus rides, some tough conversations over the years. But to me, Coach has an incredible sense of humor. Like when I get off the phone with him, I find myself picking up the phone and calling my friends, you can't believe what this guy just said, you know? Like I'll see him soon. I was supposed to have lunch with him on July 5th. It got pushed back for different reasons, but I'll see him soon. And I'm telling you, when I walk in, wherever, in a restaurant, he'll size me up. And if I'm casual like I'm now, he'll be like, what are you, a longshoreman? You going to shape up at the docks? What are you doing? You know, like he just hit you with some whack. He just whack you all day long. And he's, to me, one of the funniest people I know. Just when you're around him, you just feel good about life. And he's been so consistent, impacted so many lives, and has done it with class, dignity, and humility. And I mean, he's one of a kind. We're never going to have a person like that to be able to do all that. And you know, Jay, you in the media, to do all that in New York City his entire life, and do it, like I said, with the class, the humility, it's just special.
Chris, the last couple of years since you left the coaching in St. John's, you've been doing pre and post games of radio stuff for the Warriors. How have you adapted to them? And how good is Steph Curry, by the way?
Yeah, I mean, that right now, Jay, that's a great gig, man. TV is an awesome. I'm going to play golf tomorrow with Mike Breen. It's the best gig in the world.
He's a big Mets fan, too. He's a gigantic Mets fan.
We played a few weeks ago. We talked about the Mets. And like myself, his favorite play was Bud Harrelson. We'll put that on record. So you get Mike on. But, yeah, TV's great, man. I get to watch Steph and Draymond and Clay. It was an amazing season this past year because they came in with, you know, Clay had missed 941 days. So he missed, you know, two full seasons and a half. So everyone thought, you know, if they could stay above water, you know, 5, 6, 7 seed before Clay got back, they'd be in good shape. Lo and behold, they start 18-2. When Clay got back, Draymond was out. When Draymond got back, Steph was out. So for a while there, they only played 11 minutes together. And then at the end of the season, people don't remember this, with 20 games left, Draymond hurt his back, and Steph missed the last 12 games of the regular season. So coming into the playoffs, there were still question marks. But, man, they put it together. Those three have been played together for 10 years now with the Warriors, and they just have an incredible chemistry together. Their talent on the court complement each other beautifully. Their personalities complement each other, and they really just set an incredible tone of just dynamic play. They all lead in different ways. Steph's a very humble, quiet guy. Clay's kind of typical Southern California, just very mellow. And Draymond's the vocal leader. So it's a unique dynamic. And they're the most successful trio in NBA history, which you think about it. It's been a lot.
Did you travel with him, Chris, or just made
it? No. I stayed home. The only travel I did was to the finals, which was fine by me. So I do the pre and post game for NBC Sports Bay Area. Now, home games is a studio just outside the arena that we use. And when they go on the road, I go to a local NBC affiliate in San Francisco. So it's a great setup. Like I said, you know, you do your good preparation. Obviously, we see the Warriors every day, so that kind of takes care of itself. And, yeah, so it's cool. We do some interviews, you know, post-game, and it's a lot of fun. I work with Darrell Wright and Bonte Hill. We have a blast, like I said. So at this point in my life, it's a perfect gig, keeps me connected to the game, and fortunate enough to just watch an incredible team each and every day.
Chris, you missed the coaching part of it at all?
Not really, Jay. Coaching was fun. It was something I always, you know, when I first retired, it was the last thing on my mind. Because, and you know, the grind of just the simple traveling. So when I retired, the first thing I wanted to do was get off that schedule, and I did. And I went in the front office with the Warriors. I was a special assistant for 2 years. Then a GM for 4 years. And then when I was done with that, I went to ESPN and worked there for 3 years, did games, did radio, did SportsCenter. Very similar job to what I have now, but the travel was just intense. And that got old after a while for me. And then I was in Sacramento as a special assistant to my good friend Pete D'Alessandro, one of Coach Konecny's, team managers back in the day. And had a few inquiries around the NBA about coaching. So I started getting, I had books and stuff in my garage. I started getting like, Jeff Van Gundy said, if you're ever going to do it, make sure you put a plan together. So I started doing that for, you know, about 2 years. And Coach had always talked to me about coming back to Coach St. John's, and it was always not the right time. So timing had it, the job was open. I had started to put my book together and kind of jumped into it. And I really enjoyed it, but 4 years was enough. I can't say one day that I've missed it. It was just time. You know, it was a good run. We took over a team basically building from scratch. And after 4 years, we won 21 games, got to the NCAA tournament, and left, you know, a good amount of players for Coach Mike Anderson to build with. So it was fun, but I think 4 years, much like my playing career, was perfect. 4 years was just enough.
You know, not because you're a friend of mine for a long time, but you were kind of, in my mind, really a tough situation. You know, 3-time Big East player of the year, number retired pros, double Hall of Fame in college. Okay, that means all of the St. John's team is going to win 30 games every year. It didn't happen. I mean, for me, that's an exorbitant amount of pressure. Did you, I don't want you to, not an alibi, but that was an observer and a friend of yours. That it was tough. It was a tough situation for some other reasons too. No, I mean, I don't want you to alibi.
Yeah, no. Yeah, I think first and foremost, Jay, that first year, I think what we had come back was 3 minutes of playing time and 1 point. So that first year was a wash. Right? And we got some good kids in. But I knew for sure, because I had went from playing to being a GM. Your playing career does not carry over to being a GM. It's a whole different set of skills. It's a whole different job. So I never looked at it like just because I had done certain things as a player that they were going to carry over as a coach. I felt very confident in the people that coached me. What I was taught, that if I was able to pass that on to my players, it would be successful. How long it took, that varies on your talent. But there was not a day that didn't go by, whether it be a practice, a shoot around, a film session, a meeting with a parent or one of my players, that I didn't reference one of my coaches, whether it be Jack Alisi, who coached me in grade school and at Severian, Lou Piccola, who coached me at Severian, obviously Coach Konecny, almost every day I used something that he taught me. And on the court, everybody, whether it be Chuck Daly, Don Nelson, Larry Bird, all the coaches that I played for, I used stuff that I learned from them on the court and off the court as well, as far as, coaching, technique, strategy, mentoring, all those different things were a combination of all the people that had influenced me and that I was successful with. And so from that standpoint, it was very fulfilling. And much like my playing career, everyone wants to win a championship, right? But if you put everything into it, and you show up each and every day with a plan, you execute that plan, I felt very fulfilled, and maybe more importantly, felt good about what I left from what I found.
Chris, I know I used to sit with the family a lot when I came, and I know your brother's passing at the end had a big impact on you. I mean, it was a difficult last year when your brother, passed away from cancer.
Yeah, I have been through that with my mom and dad, Jay, and most people in the world are affected by cancer. It's a terrible thing to go through. So when I came back in 2015, I think just maybe months after Roddy was diagnosed with cancer, he did well for 2-3 years. But the games were, much like I played, became family gatherings. You know, right. When I was playing,
the whole crew was there. The whole crew.
Everyone showed up.
My mom and dad were always very nice to me. I remember, yeah.
My dad came from a big family. He was one of nine. And, you know, we wouldn't always see his brothers. You know, they all had their own kids, but they would come to the garden. So that was always a nice thing. So that kind of got rekindled. All my buddies from Brooklyn, all my buddies from St. John's. It was a beautiful thing to get everyone together. And yeah, you want to win every game, but you know what? That camaraderie, the brotherhood, the time I was able to spend with Roddy those last 4 years, it's a blessing that it turned out that way. And it's not the reason I left, but I'll tell you what, it made it way more enjoyable and meaningful for me when I walked out with a beat the guard at St. John's and he came into a bunch of road games. He's sitting behind me, 100% into it, and I want all my players to succeed. We talk after the game on the phone. So it was that part to me outweighs any one loss record. The wins and losses, when you play and you coach, those things are going to fall where they may. Yeah. But when you develop those relationships and you have those memories, that's
Bill, can I enjoy my time at St. John's during your 4 years there? It was great. I appreciate your time. And listen, I know you're in the West Coast a lot. You're always welcome in Citi Field. We're fortunate enough to hopefully get in the Players World Series. There'll all be some seats for the Mullen family here at Citi Field. So,
Jay, I can't thank you enough. No, much like I said about Coach Karnesecca, your career, the way you've been able to handle yourself in New York City through championships, through tough seasons, the consistency, the dignity and the class and loyalty is unmatched. Thank you so much for your friendship.
Me too, Chris. You're always welcome here. Let's stay in touch and thanks for your time.
I will see you at a Met game soon, Jay.
And give me a holler, my friend. Always welcome. All right.
Let's go, thanks. Mets.
You got it, Mr. Chris. Bye. Thanks, Chris.